And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from the shepherd, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us.
And they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in a manger.
And when they saw it, they made known the saying that had been told them concerning this child.
Verse 18, publish.
Okay, verse 8. And all those who heard it marveled at those things which were told them by the shepherds.
But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart.
And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them.
And at the end of 8 days, when he was circumcised, he was called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb.
And when the time came for their purification according to the law of Moses, they brought him up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord.
As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male who opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord.
And to offer a sacrifice according to what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or 2 young pigeons.
Okay, very good. So afterwards, these shepherds are staring up into the sky and the angels return. It says they were gone away from them into heaven. Well, that's where angels go, I guess. That's where they live. And where they would continue to serve and worship the Lord, as we see like in the book of Revelation. So maybe they were just standing there. Doesn't really give us the details of that, but Jesus ascended back up into heaven, and we do have the details of that on what's called Ascension Day. I'll never forget when I was a new believer, and I got saved there in Germany, and we met these people at the Methodist Church by accident. Our first day in Germany, you know, I was with John Turnock, the guy who led me to the Lord later on. And he and I went downtown because it was Christmas, and the military really didn't know how to get us settled at that time, because many of them had gone on furlough, you know, back home and stuff, so they weren't really prepared to take care of us. So we got to go out into town, and we heard the, like, Christian hymns. And so we followed the noise until we actually, it was actually kind of a hidden alley area, but we finally saw that it looked like a church there. So we went, you know, down the alley to it. We walked up to the door, and as soon as we got to the door swung open, and all these people started coming out, shaking our hands, and all of this, like, hello, you know. We don't speak German, you know. And so they all filed past us, and then the pastor and another lady named Krimhilda came out, and Krimhilda spoke perfect English, and she worked for the American military, in fact. And so here we were introduced to the pastor of the Methodist Church, and he invited us to come over to his house, and so we went over to the house. And so we ended up having a real close relationship with him and the people in that church, actually.
That's super cool.
Yeah, in fact, one of the members of that church was Friedhelm Abler, and he had two kids at that time, and he needed help in his vineyards. He had several vineyards separated from each other, and he couldn't keep up the maintenance to take care of them. And he asked if there was any chance that we could help. And Well, we really didn't know for sure, but as it turned out, we just had office jobs, and when they got up at 5, we were pretty well free, and so we helped them a lot.
Wow.
And spent a lot of time there, and I really got close to that family, Fred Helmaber and his wife. In fact, Jan and I, when we went back to Germany as missionaries, we were able to contact him, and we spent a Christmas time with him and his family. And why did I say
about the ascension, though, about that story?
Yes, thank you. I'm getting old, I guess. Yeah, we were talking with him in his house and discussing Christian things, and he talked about Ascension Day, and I wasn't even a Christian then, and I had no idea what he was talking about. But Ascension Day is the day that they really celebrated that day, the day that Jesus was taken back up into heaven. And of course, we read about that in the book of Acts, where they're all looking up, and there were those two angelic men who said, "Why are they doing that?" Because this same Jesus, which you saw go up into heaven, will return in like manner. And so that was the ascension. He had disappeared out of their sight in the clouds. And who knows how these angels departed, whether it was the same way or not. Anyway, I got off track there. Well, the shepherds immediately decide to go see this new baby. And you can understand, you know, the angel told them that they gave them a sign that they would see this baby in swaddling clothes and so forth. So they evidently were given that opportunity, or I don't know how they were told where to go and how and all that, but they went anyway. The angel must have given them the information. And they were really excited to see this. I mean, remember what the angel had told them, that this baby was born in Bethlehem, who was Christ the Lord. Luke 1:31. Well, to them, that they understood that that was the Messiah. And he was the Lord, that he would be the Son of God. And so here, the announcement is made to them. They must have wondered about that. But they were so excited that they would get to see the Messiah themselves before anyone else even. So here, I just can't imagine, they must have really gotten there, you know, figured out how they could take care of the sheep somebody left behind, and they got to go, or, you know, and they would be eyewitnesses of the Messiah himself. So they say, "Let us now go." But they didn't waste any time there, even though it was nighttime. You know, you could have thought, well, let's wait till daybreak at least before we go, but no, they went right away. And when they said, "Let us now go," the commentators say that the Greek term there denotes a high strain of emotion. So they were excited about doing this. And it says it also kind of let you know that they weren't in doubt about what they just heard and saw. I mean, there was more than one, obviously. I don't know how many shepherds there were, but, you know, they all saw the same thing. So they weren't doubting what happened. So they wanted to go see what the Lord had made known unto them. So it says, they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in a manger. Well, they came as fast as they could. Fortunately, it wasn't in Bend, or they had never got there in time.
Yes.
They were eager to see the Savior. They were eager to to do what the angel had informed them of. And it's good to make haste when we know what God's will is. We should be zealous to have an immediate obedience to whatever God shows us. Like Zacchaeus came into my mind. You know, there he is on the limb of the tree, and Jesus is walking in his tent toward his town, and he's up there on that tree. And Jesus looks up to him and says, "Zacchaeus, come down, or I'm going to have lunch with you today." You know, I mean, first of all, how did Jesus know his name was Zacchaeus? That must have shocked him tremendously right there and convinced him immediately, right, that Jesus is the real thing. He knew my name and he's never been here before. You know, and he made haste, you know, to come down from the tree and prepare things for the Lord to come to his house. Well, these are monumental events here. The shepherds, they're being overwhelmed here, make their decision to go immediately, because this wasn't just a casual news here. We're talking about an amazing, you know, they've waited centuries and centuries and centuries for the Messiah. And here the angel and the heavenly host is telling him that he's born in Bethlehem and you can go see him. And the sign will be that you'll see him in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. Well, the commentators say that we should apply this to our own lives, that we should be in wonder at the revelation of Christ for our own salvation, and that we should, because of the privilege and wonder of it all, we should want to also zealously please the Lord in all that we do, to be eager to obey his commandments. Well, they found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in the manger. So they were disappointed, right? It happened just as they were told. And they were directed by the angel. History says that the traditional site of the field where the shepherds were is about 2 miles from Bethlehem. So I don't think it took them too long to get there. 2 miles. I don't know. It doesn't say if they walked.
They used to walking too. Everybody just walked everywhere they wanted.
Yeah, 2 miles is doable.
These guys are probably super fit. They're probably just trucking.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
So imagine them going and meeting with Joseph and Mary. Hello. We're shepherds. We've been abiding in our fields. And guess what happened? And so they were telling their story to Joseph and Mary. And you can imagine Mary and Joseph are sharing their own experiences. Really? Well, guess what happened to me? You know, the angel appeared to me also, Mary said. And he said all these things to me. And Joseph said, I had a dream and I wasn't even going to, I was going to put away Mary. And then the angel of the Lord came to me in this dream. And, wow, all of these things. And Mary says, I went to visit Elizabeth. And Elizabeth prophesied all these things concerning the son that I would bear, being the Christ, the Messiah, and so forth. You can imagine that. These are pretty exciting stories, right?
It's amazing, too, that that's just like the Lord, to appear to lonely people that are nothing, instead of revealing himself to the, you know, the magistrates and really important
people. That's what
people.
I was just thinking, too, how discreet it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
It's just like the Lord, because but no man should glory in his presence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he always chooses the weak things and the real lonely things, and they were very lonely. Joseph and Mary must have been really poor.
Yes.
And then shepherds, you know, nobody liked them much.
Well, you guys are stealing all my thunder here. Well, they saw the baby lying in the manger. Now, that must have been something to look at there. They knew when that baby was the Messiah, the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine them staring in the eyes of that face of the baby. What was the baby thinking?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Hi, fellas.
Like, how's God instead of a baby?
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
I always think what's going through Mary and Joseph's head, too.
Yeah.
The shepherds show up. Later on, the three wise men show up. And they're like, wow.
What are these guys getting around?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, after 400 years of silence, too. Mm-hmm. So they found him swaddling clothes there, confirming and verifying what the angels had told him, strengthening their faith for sure. But I just, I like to imagine, you know, what that would have been like.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't imagine.
Just those guys going out over there and seeing that. Okay, verse 17, when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. So after having this very exciting time of fellowship with Joseph and Mary and trading all of the facts of their experiences, it says that they went out and told other people there in the area what they had learned, what they had experienced, declaring to them how God had given this child to Mary, and by a miracle of conception of the Holy Spirit. I'm sure Mary must have shared all of that, what the angel had spoken to her and what she herself experienced, and that he would be the promised Messiah and bring salvation and bring the forgiveness of sins and so forth. Well, like you said, you guys were saying, they were chosen to be the eyewitnesses of this account of the birth of the Savior. Though a poor shepherds, you know, like you were all saying. And so they were telling all of these people, but how did these people respond? You know, did they accept their testimony? You know, since God is always choosing people that society does not recognize, the people that they talk to are not very willing to hear their testimony. Well, isn't it the same today as well? But I thought about the disciples that Jesus chose, the tax collector, the fisherman, and so forth. He didn't choose people that would be influential in the society. People wouldn't be very willing and ready to listen to these guys. Well, they're just fishermen, you know.
Except that they were ignorant and unlearned.
I know.
The only one who wasn't would have been Paul later on. He was a Pharisee and educated.
Yeah, Paul was different. So he does choose some who are wise and so forth. Yeah, even in some of the end of Paul's letters, he'll mention, well, you know, remember to pray or thank this person and remember so-and-so in the church in their house. And sometimes they'll say, and so-and-so who was in Caesar's household. Oh, there was some lovely people there too.
I think about like Moses as well, though, because, you know, he was very educated.
He was.
But it shows that God can go, you know, choose his educated people or his...
Yeah.
Guys that,
but then after all the years he lived in the wilderness, he had to undo all the...
the humbling?
About all the 40 years.
That's where I'm at right now.
By that time, he was ignorant again of all he learned in Egypt.
Well, even the Apostle Paul said that all that he had learned, he countered it as nothing.
That's right.
All that.
Yeah.
Because it does, you know, not that God's against education. He can use it. He can use anything. But it's just that men would glory in that over him, you know. I think everything's them and in their power rather than relying on the Lord. That's what's bad about those things. You have to keep it in perspective.
Yeah.
Not let it get a power over you.
Yeah, I mean, if you are educated, God could use that for His glory.
He's used a lot of educated people, for sure.
Yeah, these poor shepherds, they're out, they can't restrain themselves, and they're out telling everybody what's happening, and they're just full of joy and excitement and so forth. And then in verse 18 it says, and all they that heard it wondered at those things that were told them by the shepherds. I noticed Paul used the word marvel. Well, I really looked at that word, wondered, what it meant. And so all the commentators really point that out a lot too. It's a very negative thing, that word. They wondered. It was a very negative thing. You see, they wondered because they knew, they had been taught that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, of the lineage of David, and all of that. But would he be born of these parents who lived in Nazareth? You know, would his dad be the carpenter there in Nazareth?
So wondered there means more like doubted.
Yeah. They were not openly receiving what the shepherds said.
Skeptical?
They were just kind of,
Well, the messengers weren't very good either. Somebody came that looked like that. We wondered too. Who are these guys?
It's
a homeless guy came to your door.
Yeah.
I was just thinking how our preconceived ideas of, even I guess how you even interpret scripture, I guess, but I always think about the return of Christ and all the myriad of books out there that the Bible, the European, Roman Empire, blah, 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 you know, whatever the story is. And, you know, I tell Jen, I go, you know, it's probably going to be like nothing like we get all these preconceived ideas of how it's going to be. Kind of like we were talking about last week, the movie kind of influences your... And then that's, you know, maybe these people are in the same boat. You know, they have a preconceived idea.
Undoubtedly they had preconceived ideas. You know, their Messiah, what did they emphasize about the Messiah? That he would be the king that would come and be the ruler and take over, defeat the Romans and all. That's how they were thinking about the Messiah.
Yeah.
So they expected him to come from, you know, highfalutin parents.
You'd be a great potentate, for sure. You wouldn't be holy.
they thought that he would be in, you know.
And they had scriptures. So that, and then they came to that conclusion.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. It says a lot about us as people.
Yeah. They thought he would appear wonderfully, you know.
Gorgeously arrayed. Instead, in a manger, you know.
Yeah. Instead, he came in humble circumstances, to say the least, being born in a stable, in poverty. That was not what they expected. So here the shepherds are sharing that, right? Yeah, we saw him. He's there in the manger, in the stable. He was born there.
Right? The king of kings.
Yeah, right.
And they're like,
really? I don't think so.
He's been drinking.
Yeah.
And, the angels came to you guys.
They were like
stories
homeless
getting,
people.
Getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, well. And it was so surprising anyway. I mean, it was really an outlandish story too, wasn't it? The things that they were saying were really out of this world, weren't they? Yeah, we saw the angel came. Glory of the Lord was shining around, and then the whole host of the angels came. You know, how reliable did they think these guys were?
I thought they were eating the mushrooms out of the pasture.
Exactly.
What did you guys have for dinner then?
Oh, goodness, that would have been shocking for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, they interpret that as a negative thing, and they weren't receiving what the shepherds were saying. You know, they were just curious, so to speak. Okay, all right, whatever you say, you know. But you notice that none of them made haste to go see this child themselves. They just kind of put it off, you know. The whole story. They went on as though they heard nothing. Well, Jesus' own ministry was something that people wondered about also. I mean, they were amazed at what he said and did. After all, he did do many, many miracles, didn't he? And I wonder how they could just question him. I mean, look at what he's doing. He's feeding 5,000 people.
I don't get that either.
You know, he's a, they bring all of the sick people.
He heals them all.
Of every kind of disease known. And he heals every one of them every time. Could this be the Messiah? Duh. Right?
It's kind of, it's boggling though.
It is.
Because it, again, it goes to show that that spiritual, I don't know, what would you call it? Like blindness or just like,
blindness,
even though it's like right in your face.
Yeah.
That you're just unwilling or you can't. You can't. You just, I don't know.
But to be despised and rejected, accused all the time, challenged, hated. Well, it says he would come to his own, and his own received him not.
Mm-hmm. And even today, you know, God's people are despised all over the world. They truly are. Especially in third world countries where there's dictators. They're just, why would they persecute Christians? They're good citizens in every way. They're not doing anything to harm anybody. They're just helping.
I'm not trying to kill you, pickpocket you. I'm not trying to, you know, it's like, why would you want to hurt me?
But yet they're throwing these poor people in China and different places in North Korea for no reason. All they did was preach the gospel.
Yeah. So well, we see that, you know, God's chosen people there in the beginning were the Jews. And to this day, the Jews are hated by people.
Yeah, why is it the Jews are hated?
Why would that be?
A little tiny country that's so tiny, and everybody just hates the Jews.
Yeah, I always wondered, do you people ever think about why that is? Why are you hating the Jews?
They really are.
It's just it's amazing.
There's no reason for it.
There isn't.
Men just hate it because it's of the Lord. You know, it's just ancient people from way back.
Yeah, Jesus is, you know, controlling the wind. And what about the account of Lazarus?
Yeah.
Man, there were a lot of people there.
Saw that.
Trying to comfort Mary and Martha, you know, and they all go to the gravesite there. And Jesus calls him out of the tomb. And how did they respond? Well, the people are going to go after him. We got to figure out a way to put him to death.
We got to kill this guy. Yeah. Just raise someone from the dead. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of living in that end times. Romans 1, where people can't think straight anymore. And we're, I don't know. You know, you look at the news and you wonder politically how people can be so off base about things. It's just, I mean, it's just impossible. You can't be that bad off, right? But they are. And I wonder, you know, like these AOC people and stuff, they were voted in. And then I'm like, now wait a minute.
Yeah.
The people voted them in.
Yeah.
Who are these people that we're living with here?
Yeah. How does that happen?
Yeah. Things have changed. Well, miracles, even though Jesus did all those miracles, it didn't produce faith. And yet, we still have those charismatic people who are trying to prove their validity, you know, of their religion by the miracles that they do. You know, but their miracles are certainly not following the miracles of Jesus. You know, they like to slay people and stuff like that. I think that came into being when we were down in California.
Benny Hinn doing that?
Yeah, and they started to slay people in the spirit.
Yeah.
What is that?
I know. Man, first church I ever walked into that happened, man, it'd be like, so long. See ya.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah. Yeah, all that kind of weird.
Yes. People are so gullible, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, it always amazes me. You get the craziest people. Like, who are some of the real crazies out there?
Benny Hinn.
And
Copeland.
That's
he's the worst of all.
Oh, man, that guy is. And yet, you know, and then the camera might be on, and then it shows the people, thousands of people out there listening to this guy. Just amazing to me that people could be so gullible to listen to some crackpot.
You know? I was listening to this guy today that he calls out some of these different false teachers. And this false teacher was actually saying, well, I missed the I was probably in the middle of it when I missed the final end because the baby needed a bath. But anyways, he was saying that Jesus, when he bled, he didn't have enough blood in his body to actually cover the sins of those people. And so with this guy, the guy who...
How many quarts does it take?
Yeah, exactly. So the guy who's narrating this is, you know, he's saying, this is a false teacher, look at this stuff. And so what he was getting at, which I guess I have to complete this, is that basically he's going to explain this other way, how Jesus is going to be able to, that since he didn't have enough blood, how he's going to be able to forgive. And he's at this conference, and there's all these young teenagers, So this guy, his job is like, he points out these false teachers, and he's like, look at this stuff, like, this is what's happening right now. And all these young people, and they use a lot of entertainment, lights and music, disco stuff, and these kids they're brought in through emotion, and then they hear that stuff, and these false teachers just gobble them up. But I'll have to complete it so I can tell you what it is he came up with. But I mean, I'm sure listening to this going,
I've never heard
that's
that.
That's crazy.
Well, that's really crazy.
Wow.
Oh, mercy.
Well, we know that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a gift.
For sure.
By grace. And that no man can come to God or to the Father or to Christ unless the Father draw him. So, well, Mary was different. She kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. So she probably just rehearsed all those things that Elizabeth had prophesied and mulled over. All of that, what the angel Gabriel had told her, and what her husband saw in his dream. And now the shepherds said to her. She kept all these things and pondered over them, meditated on them. Doesn't say that she, in her excitement, went out and spread the news to other people. Some people think... she didn't do that because she didn't want to come across as being proud, like, you know. And I want to tell you, I'm the mother of the Messiah, you know.
What is it that you do?
You do. You are. Oh, I see. Maybe she was avoiding being taken to the insane asylum. I don't know.
That'd be really hard. I mean, that would be quite a, I don't know how you describe it, a weight or a, you know, it would be a lot, you know,
yeah.
Obviously. I think all you could do is just kind of, well,
hold on to
wait
it.
Wait till it's,
tell you.
I don't think women in those days were very forward to do things like that, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's a really patriarchal type society.
Mm-hmm.
Women knew their place, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was real young too, remember?
A young girl, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe she hadn't really fully understood all those things that happened anyway. She was mulling them over, you know. But she did believe them. She did have faith. So she wasn't like the people who wondered in a negative way. She just guarded them in her heart, which means she pondered them, she weighed them, she giving every account an important examination, meditating upon all that was said and done, and observing them carefully, remembering them. we need to do that too, you know. You know, Peter said in his epistle that it was, he didn't feel bad about bringing to their remembrance the things that he felt they already knew, but reminding them. And that's pretty much all that we do nowadays. Anyway, we don't bring anything new. Like your brother used to say, if it's new, it can't be true. And if it's not new, it's okay. I don't know. I can't remember.
Do
you remember
he
that?
Said it all the time. I remember.
Yeah, I do.
If it's new, it's not true. That's the only one I can remember.
If it's true, it's not new. If it's new, it's not true. And if it's true, it's not new.
Oh, there you go.
Is that it? Is that something he came up with?
Yeah, that's what he used to say all the time.
I like that.
Yeah.
But the Lord wants us to, you know, to be his remembrances. He even said that in the Old Testament, because we forget. If we're not reminded over and over, then after a year or so, we forget stuff. That's why we have to reread and re-meditate and all that, because we're all prone to forget.
I'm really good at forgetting.
Wait a minute.
I'm getting worse and worse too.
If you're good at forgetting, I'm in trouble.
No, when I study something, I have to relearn it every time. You know, it's easy to forget.
And he used to be able to remember really good, though, when you were young. He remembered all the scriptures. Now he's forgotten all of those.
Yeah, I could mesmerize when I was younger. Yeah, we're called upon to consider and meditate on things. Apostle Paul said that to Timothy. And in the Psalms, David points that out many times. I think it was MacArthur who said there were things that we should always be considering. And one of those, he had nine things. The first one was the marvel of God's interest in man. You know, what is man that you are mindful of him? Thing. It is a marvel, isn't it, that God would have such interest in us? The vanity and disappointment of pursuing a worldly life. Three, the lessons of nature. Those are good things to consider, aren't they?
The lessons of nature.
Yeah, I mean, we look at up in the heavens, and we see the glory of God and the power of God there. You know, they don't have any answer for where all this energy is coming from.
Right.
You know, and then, of course, the scriptures tell us that he made all of the stars. You know, as this just kind of on the side, God did this, God did this, and then it says, and he made the stars also. And that's all he says about the stars.
You know.
Are you kidding me?
Like it was like an easy just
stars. If it's such a light matter, and then we're looking at this through these telescopes, I was like, well, wait a minute. Wow. But, you know, there is a lot of lessons we learn from the animals and the things that they do. I marvel at those, you know, like those monarch butterflies that fly how many thousands of miles to the same trees. And then they, you know, they die, but the next generation does exactly the same thing. How do they, you know, how do they explain? You know, you hear this, oh, they follow the magnetism of the earth. Oh come on. I don't
know. There's one place. They all go to that one place.
Same thing, you know, with those lobsters that all of a sudden start marching to migrate somewhere, you know. Or the turtles. Who lay their eggs on some beach.
The same beach every time.
Yeah.
And then for a few years, they go out to sea, and they go thousands of miles out to sea. And I'm like, you know, if that happened to me, there's no way I'd ever come back to that beach. Not in a million years.
Oh, yeah, no way.
And they're underwater.
Yeah.
How do they know?
How do they know? It just shows that to me, God is directing things, and it's not their knowledge of the magnetism of the earth. God is definitely directing them. So many things in nature like that. What an evidence of his existence and of his guidance in nature. And history. That's one thing I wish I was stronger in, would be in church history. And even, you know, when I was younger, we got that book on church history in every century. A book that was written, I don't
1800s.
Know, in the 1800s. But, and it gives the details of everything that happened in the world in every century, religious and secular.
Really?
And it is, all the names and places are all documented. And it, I mean, man, if I knew that. But, you know, we don't know history. We don't even know our
own
history.
That's why we repeat it again, because we don't know history.
And, you know, we keep making the same mistakes, like people say, because we repeat the problems, because we don't know history. Mm-hmm. So we repeat the problems that occur.
They have a shallow knowledge of it. They don't really teach history and geography anymore. So the kids nowadays, they go out, ask them, they don't even know how our government works. They ask them, they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't even know who the leaders are.
That's
in
good.
Congress or anything, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's see, the Congress meets in the White House, right?
That's what.
Yeah, and, you know, even in the Apostle Paul's letter to the Corinthians, you know, he talks about all the things that happened for our example in the Old Testament, and that they were written for our admonition, that we wouldn't fall into the same pitfalls that they fell into. History.
Mm-hmm.
He also includes the purpose of chastisement, which comes first of all in Deuteronomy, and then of course we read about it in Hebrews. But it's just a quote from Deuteronomy, actually. We should consider God's blessing and providence in our lives. We should consider the end of life and God's wonderful works. Job 37:14. And we should consider Christ himself and meditate upon him. As it tells us to do in Hebrews, consider the high priest and apostle of your profession. Well, and the shepherds returned. They went back to their fields, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told unto them. Well, they had an experience of a lifetime there. And they say that, you know, their lives were never the same after that.
How could it be?
Yeah. They had great joy, and boy, they were privileged. So privileged that I'm sure when they got back, they were like, I wonder why the Lord did that for us. You know, we're just shepherds out here. Why would he have chosen us and given us these amazing experiences like this?
I wonder, so these guys, let's just presume, I don't know, let's say they're 25 years old. Let's say 25, I don't know. And then, you know, so they see the babe, and then they go their own way, and then Jesus grows up, you know, and there's all this time and space.
Yeah.
And then presuming, you know, maybe they're still alive when his ministry starts, you know. Maybe before this ministry starts, they're like, oh, you know, I wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have internet, you don't have, and then maybe start now, you know, later, they're much older, of course, now, and they start hearing these stories, and they're fucking like, whoa. You know, wow, this is, I was there.
Yeah.
You know, that would be cool.
Yeah, that seems true. With John the Baptist and Jesus, you know, they had all this spectacular things that happened at their birth, but then not a lot happened there for quite a few years there. Jesus' ministry began around 30, so obviously John the Baptist was just a few months older than him. And, you know, you just wondered what happened during those years.
Well, the next thing that happened to Jesus was when he was 12.
Yeah, so he did have...
the birth till he's 12, where he's with those doctors talking in Jerusalem in the temple.
Yep. Which shows us that he wasn't just the normal 12-year-old kid.
He's a little bit precocious, huh?
Yeah, to think that the doctors would even give him credence at all to even talk.
Yeah.
And yet there he is discussing and questioning them and giving them answers. And they're marveling because he knows more than they do.
That reminds me of Andrew today. And I said, he said some real big word, and I forget what it was. And I said, well, how would you know that word? You know, I said, did your mom teach you anything? He said, no, I just knew it. I said, well, how could you? He said, well, the Lord made me that way.
Yeah. You know? That's his answer for everything. And he's right.
He said that to me quite a few times. Really? I said, how come you're so smart?
Must be so, must like be nice to be so gifted. Unlike the rest of us.
That was more shocking.
That's cute.
Well, we all wonder at God's choice of us.
Okay.
I think all believers wonder about that.
Totally.
Okay, and then we have the circumcision and purification rites. Verse 21, after 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel, before he was conceived in the womb. That's the announcement that was made to Mary in Luke 1:31. Being circumcised after 8 days was a requirement of the law of Moses in Leviticus 12:3. So all of the boy babies had to be circumcised. And there were three reasons for that. And this is MacArthur's take here. One was just the health benefits. And clearly, one of the strong reasons was it was a sign that God gave to Abraham in his covenant that he would be the father of many nations and so forth. And that the people would be identified, I mean the boys, would all be identified because they would be circumcised. And that was the sign that they were part of the covenant. So you know that that was really an important thing that they had to do, wasn't it? And if they didn't do it, you know, there were terrible things that happened to them. You know, even Moses, you know, forgot to, to do that. And Zipporah had, I don't know how she knew, but when the angel of the Lord was about to slay Moses there, she quickly got the knife out and circumcised, you know.
That's a wild story.
It is a wild story. But it was their identity. And so that was given to Abraham there. And, of course, there was the foreshadowing truth that it was a spiritual lesson showing the need for cleansing from sin. And was that sin passed from each generation to the next generation. That each person had to be circumcised.
They said circumcise your heart in the new, you know.
Exactly, and that's where we read about, even in the Old Testament, where the prophets would say, you know, you need to circumcise your heart and turn to the Lord. Yeah, many in Deuteronomy and Jeremiah, I have this whole bunch of verses on that showing that it was just a physical symbol of the spiritual cleansing that God wanted in their hearts to cut away the idolatry and that sort of thing, to circumcise their hearts. But Jesus didn't need to be circumcised. He wasn't a sinner.
Who was that?
Jesus.
Oh.
Why did he need to be circumcised?
Fulfill all righteousness.
Yeah. My wife always has the answers.
Not always.
Same as his baptism, right? I mean, he didn't need to be baptized with the baptism of repentance that John the Baptist was doing. But he had to fulfill all righteousness. He had to fulfill what was written in the law. Of course, you know, the Jews all thought that they had to do all the things that were contained in the law of Moses. And that was their downfall, though, because they didn't have a nature with the power to overcome sin. So they were, but they still thought they were doing it, didn't they? They even added to Moses' law with their own traditions. Yeah, they were probably easier to fulfill, you know, than the law of Moses' laws. Yeah, well, he was born under the law, it says in the book of Galatians, born of a woman, born under the law. So he had to be perfect. And even though no man, you know, we're all born in sin, no, we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God and so forth. None righteous, no, not one. There's none good, no, not one. I always have to tell these young people, you want another brownie? No, I'm good. No, I say, no, you're not. There's none good.
Nice, that's a good trick. That's a good one.
But, you know, remember that if you didn't keep the entire law to perfection, you were cursed. So Jesus, in order to remove the curse from us, had to keep the law perfectly, which he did. So a lot of the, you know, emphasis of Christ dying on the cross is sometimes overlooked that part of it, that he fulfilled the righteousness of the law perfectly in order to impute that righteousness to those who believed on him. So it was the trade-off was he took our sin on the cross, but he also imputed his righteousness to us. Another reason that he was circumcised is because his parents were obligated to do that. And just think, how would the Jews look upon him? I mean, Mary knew that he was the Messiah, but how would the Jews accept him if he wasn't circumcised? They would not. So,
yes, I kind of, like on a smaller level, you know, you think about like leaders, a good leader is one that will tell you to do something, but they're not afraid to do it themselves. You know, so like if I'm a foreman and I tell you, you know, go dig that ditch and I just sit there, and, you know.
Yeah.
But if I get in there, you know, if I lead by doing the hard stuff, but I know this would be a very small point to all this, but I kind of look at like, you know, Jesus himself, he's a baby. And he's going to feel that pain. Luckily, we can't remember, but he's going through the same pain that we all go through. And and some could say, well, he's the Son of God; he doesn't have to do that. But you know, it shows that he's stepping into the very stuff, the hardship and the pain.
Yeah, he took upon himself that full human nature, and so that he could identify with all of our issues. That's why he's such a great high priest, because he can sympathize with us because he's done it himself.
He's been there, felt it, gone through it.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a very hard life. Okay. And they named him Jesus because that was the name given to Mary from the angel. And they named children, usually, it seems, when they were circumcised. Remember, that was the case with John the Baptist. Now, Elizabeth said his name was John, and they all said, "No, you don't have anybody by that name in your family. Hey, Zacharias, what are you going to name him? Aren't you going to name him different?" And then he writes his name was John, and they're all, "Whoa." But they gave names there at that time. And they called him Jesus, which is very significant. It's the Greek equivalent of Joshua, which means Yahweh saves, or Jehovah saves. Matthew 1:21 says, "And thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins." And Hebrews 4:8 is very identifying of this. Or you want to read that? I don't know who's next to read. But Hebrews 4:8.
Okay. "For if Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterwards have spoken of another day?"
Okay. So, you know, you got to read all this before Hebrews. He's talking about Joshua and how Joshua led them and gave them rest, but he didn't give them the full rest. He spoke it. And so, you know, all the prophets later were speaking of another day because Joshua didn't give them the real rest. He just led them into Canaan land, but the real rest is found in Christ. So you can look it up, and every commentator will tell you that where that word Jesus is named in Hebrews 4:8 is really Joshua. Hmm. But it just shows that Joshua and Jesus are the same name.
Well, in the Old Testament it's Jehoshua, and then the New in Greek is Yeshua.
Did you hear that?
So I always wondered, what does the Lord want us to call him?
Yeah.
You know, in German, it's...
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses always, you know, say we're wrong because we don't call God by his name. They do, and therefore God is on their side. We're all washed up, you know. But now, you know, like MacArthur, he really makes a big point about we should be calling him Yahweh. Not Jehovah, but Yahweh.
But he had a lot of names besides Yahweh. You know? I mean, and every nation has a different name, like, you know, Jesus in German. Mm-hmm. So does the Lord want us to call him Hebrew or the Greek word? Or can we just keep calling him Jesus? That's the way we know him, you know?
So, what I always wonder about how's it pronounced in German?
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus?
Yep. Jesus.
Yep.
And I don't know, what's it in Spanish? It's similar to that.
It's Jesus in Spanish.
Jesus, right?
Jesus, yeah. And there are other places that are similar, but some of them are really different. You know?
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, so we'll end with that.
That was very good. Thank you. Really appreciate it, Gene. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.